This message comes from OnPoint's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you qualify, and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. It was impossible to turn away from what unfolded today on Capitol Hill. Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh and Professor Christine Blasey Ford testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Ford said she was terrified to be there, but never wavered in her testimony.
Dr. Ford, with what degree of certainty do you believe Brett Kavanaugh assaulted you?
100%.
Ford testified over the course of 4 hours, and when it was his turn, Kavanaugh made it clear he was going to fight for his job, or this job, and his reputation.
Your coordinated and well-funded effort to destroy my good name and destroy my family will not drive me out.
An emotional, heated, and extraordinary day of testimony with so much on the line, including the fundamental legitimacy of the process to select Supreme Court justices and perhaps of the High Court itself. This hour in a special live evening broadcast of On Point, the Kavanaugh hearing, and what America thinks now. You can join us. What's your verdict on what unfolded today? What did you hear? And who do you believe? And how do you judge how the lawmakers did today in these extraordinary hours of testimony? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining me now from Washington is David Savage. He's Supreme Court and Legal Affairs Correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Meghna.
Hi. Also in Washington is Ginger Gibson, political correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, thank you so much for joining us now as well.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, it's been an extraordinary day here. So, David, I mean, your first thoughts. Have you ever seen anything like it?
No. I covered the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas, and this, I think, was even more riveting. Anita Hill testified in a very sort of calm, casual manner. I thought Dr. Ford was a very powerful witness because there was a sort of emotional fragility in telling this. This was a very hard story for her to tell. You could see it in her face and in her voice, but she was very precise and very clear and knew all the details. And then when she was asked, you know, Q&A, are you sure it was Brett Kavanaugh? Absolutely sure. I mean, she had a very clear, firm recollection. I will say if there's any weakness in her case is that there's sort of no corroboration or no other witnesses. She's telling a very powerful, very believable story that happened to her when she was 15 years old. But if you were analyzing it sort of as a lawyer, you might say, well, there's also no witnesses
right
to back her up.
Well, I want to come back to that point because it's an important one that in fact was discussed at length and quite vigorously amongst the senators themselves today. But first, to your point, David, about the nature of Professor Ford's testimony, let's just play this clip here. You're going to hear Vermont's Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat, asking Christine Blasey Ford what she remembered most about the alleged assault that she says she suffered at the hands of Brett Kavanaugh. Here's what she said.
What is the strongest memory you have? Strongest memory of the incident? Something that you cannot forget?
Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter. The uproarious laughter between the two. And they're having fun at my expense.
It's Christine Blasey Ford talking about what she remembers about the alleged assault that she says she suffered at the hands of Brett Kavanaugh and his friend Mike Judge. Ginger Gibson, respond to that. I mean, here she is asserting that she cannot forget it because it is essentially seared into her brain.
That's right. And you could see staff in the room, the hearing room, wiping tears from their eyes. That was a really impactful moment. Another powerful moment as I was talking to women not in sort of the Washington bubble was when she said she now has two front doors because of that trauma, because of the need to have another way to get out of her house. That really resonated with some women who maybe didn't initially know if they were going to believe her. But that seemed like something only a victim would have done in the wake of an event like that.
And I want to correct myself, by the way. It's Mark Judge, and I misspoke his name a little bit earlier. It's Mark Judge. But David, to your point, when you were just saying that there is, as riveting as the testimony as Professor Ford may have brought, there's no corroboration. But, I mean, isn't that exactly one of the things that we heard Democratic senators say all day, that how could there be corroboration if there's no additional investigation, or Judge himself is not subpoenaed to testify?
Yes, I agree with that. I thought Kavanaugh had a very strong, powerful, emotional rebuttal, said, I never did this. But repeatedly, when he was asked, shouldn't there be an FBI investigation? Shouldn't Mark Judge be questioned about this? She says Mark Judge was there. He's got a history of drinking. Kavanaugh was asked, it must have been 8 or 10 times, and he would not endorse or say he supports or call for an FBI investigation. And you're quite right to say, if you wanted some corroboration, more detail, more, you would think you would want a thorough investigation.
Well, to that point, one of those many moments we have right here, this is where Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin spent quite a bit of his allotted time questioning Judge Kavanaugh when Judge Kavanaugh had his testimony. And Dick Durbin asked, why wouldn't Brett Kavanaugh call for an FBI investigation? And here's one particularly heated moment in their exchange.
I'm asking about the FBI investigation.
The committee figures out how to ask the questions. I'll do whatever. I've been on the phone multiple times with committee counsel. I'll talk to
Judge Kavanaugh. Will you support an FBI investigation right now?
I will do whatever the committee wants to.
Personally, do you think that's the best thing for us to do? You want to answer?
So that long silence there and Senator Durbin asking Judge Kavanaugh, you won't answer. And Judge Kavanaugh continued saying effectively that he'd do whatever the committee decided to do. I mean, Ginger Gibson, this seems to be one of those points in which I feel like we witnessed a day where we had entrenched dueling narratives, right? On the one hand, Democrats saying they want an additional investigation, they want an FBI investigation. On the other hand, Republicans and Judge Kavanaugh saying, well, the committee itself has done its investigation, and Kavanaugh saying, I will do whatever the committee wants. Never shall the twain meet.
That's right. If you thought that anyone was going to leave this hearing with their mind changed or persuaded, that became very clear very quickly that that was not going to be the case. They very much dug in. And we heard from Brett Kavanaugh an opening statement that was described as very partisan. At one point, he suggested that this was revenge for the Clintons, of which his name was being maligned over. It was not an effort to persuade anyone. He was talking to conservatives. He was talking to people who were already convinced that there was a conspiracy against him, that this woman had been paid or was doing this to make a profit. And for that reason, I think you're right, this was an entrenched place that they were all speaking from, where one will look at the lack of Mark Judge being in that hearing room and say, well, that's because he's already said it didn't happen and there's no reason for him to be there. Supporters say, why would a woman sort of manufacture an accusation and then add a third person into the equation of which she has no control over and can't required to come in and testify, that if she really made it up, she would have had two people there in her story and that's it. Mm. So the same lack of our presence of Mark Judge can support both views in some ways in this argument.
Right. David Savage, do you think, even after the many hours of testimony and questioning we heard today, that the needle was moved at all amongst the senators on the Judiciary Committee?
On the Judiciary Committee, I don't think so. I'm obviously not sure. We'll mm-hmm. see in the next 24 or 48 hours. But sad to say, this seemed like an 11-10 vote 6 weeks ago when this was coming before the committee. I'm not sure that any vote will change. That's actually what happened in the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill. Everybody thought that was the Anita Hill thing would change the Senate vote, but But Thomas was approved by basically the same votes as before. The only one, I think, is Senator Flake. He didn't say much. He said there's a lot of uncertainty here. You could read his statement either way, but my guess is that the committee may vote him out by the same 11 Republicans, 10 Democrats, and then we'll see whether there are enough Republicans, all 51, stick together to approve Kavanaugh on the Senate floor.
Do you have any... Are you willing to look into your crystal ball and explore with us whether or not that's going to happen? I mean, given the broader Senate, would anyone who are the folks we should be looking out for there and then their possible votes?
Well, everybody says Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Susan Collins, mm-hmm. maybe Senator Flake, and we'll see. Those were always the votes that were hardest for the Republicans. Murkowski and Collins did not want to approve a nominee who was going to overturn Roe versus Wade. They seem willing to, Collins in particular, seem willing to accept Kavanaugh's view that he would stick with precedent. It strikes me as far-fetched. All the nominees say they're in favor of precedent, and then they get on the Supreme Court and do what they think is right, which is often not following precedent. But Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, those would be the votes in doubt, if there are any votes in doubt on the Republican side.
Mm. Well, David Savage, hold on for just a second, because I've got another question for you about the High Court itself when we come back. David Savage is the Supreme Court and Legal Affairs Correspondent for the LA Times, and Ginger Gibson is with us as well. She's Political Correspondent for Reuters. We are talking about the extraordinary day before the Senate Judiciary Committee today, where Judge Brett Kavanaugh and Professor Christine Blasey Ford testified over the allegations that Ford is making against Kavanaugh. It was heated. It was emotional. We saw maybe perhaps new tactics coming out from both Republicans and Democrats about how they're going to deal with this moment. Want to know what you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from On Point's sponsor, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the hearings before the Senate Judiciary Committee today about Christine Blasey Ford and about Brett Kavanaugh and what we learned or maybe didn't about the allegations that Ford has levied against Kavanaugh and what this means for the confirmation process for the Supreme Court and perhaps for the court itself. We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's hear from a couple more moments today from today's testimony. This is from Christine Blasey Ford's opening statement, where she said that Brett Kavanaugh, quote, groped me and tried to take off my clothes, and Ford said she feared for her life.
I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling. This is what terrified me the most and has had the most lasting impact on my life. It was hard for me to breathe, and I thought that Brett was accidentally going to kill me.
Well, later in the day, Arizona prosecutor Rachel Mitchell, she was the one hired by Republican members of the Judiciary Committee to ask questions of Professor Ford and Judge Kavanaugh. And at the beginning, she did ask some questions of Judge Kavanaugh. She asked him about Ford's testimony that she had been alone in a room with Kavanaugh and Mark Judge. And here's that exchange. And we should warn you, what you're going to hear is slightly graphic.
Dr. Ford described an incident where she was alone in a room with you and Mark Judge. Have you ever been alone in a room with Dr. Ford and Mark Judge?
No.
Dr. Ford described an incident where you were grinding your genitals on her. Have you ever ground or rubbed your genitals against Dr. Ford?
No.
That's testimony earlier today from Brett Kavanaugh. David Savage, I know I've got to let you go here, but I did want to ask one more question of you. I mean, you've been a longtime observer and reporter on the Supreme Court here. I heard Nina Totenberg say a little earlier today that the Supreme Court itself right now is at risk of inheriting a lot of political baggage out of this process. I'm just wondering if... I'm not going to say the legitimacy of the court is under threat here, but that perhaps we are entering a realm in which, or a time in which, the Supreme Court is at risk of being thoroughly, if not permanently, politicized.
Yes, I think if Kavanaugh is confirmed, half the country, maybe a little more, he made a very partisan and very sort of political statement that there has been a frenzy on the left to destroy his life, destroy his reputation. If you just took that, you would not think that's a person who could go on the Supreme Court and serve as an impartial, neutral judge for the next 30 years. You would think you're getting another justice, sort of like Clarence Thomas, who has a deep and well of angry resentment against liberals and Democrats. And I agree with Nina's assessment. I think it's very bad for the Supreme Court, because we let the Supreme Court decide some very big questions about the law and the Constitution where the country is closely divided, and you count on them to be people who could sort of set aside their personal political views. And that's increasingly hard for most Americans to believe that if you see the way the court is going.
Well, David Savage, Supreme Court and legal affairs correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. It's always great to talk with you, David. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, David Savage, and Ginger Gibson is still with us. She's political correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, I want to actually play a bit of tape here that both you and David had referred to, of a particularly heated moment and a political moment from Judge Kavanaugh's statements today. Here's that one of those times where he claims that Democrats had developed a long series of what he called false last-minute smears to block his nomination.
This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit, fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election, fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups.
Ginger Gibson, this is a completely different Brett Kavanaugh than we heard in the Fox News interview he gave not that long ago, the one in which President Trump had afterwards said that he thought Kavanaugh looked kind of weak. Now, to just this evening, the president tweeted, around 6:45, he tweeted that Judge Kavanaugh showed America exactly why I nominated him tonight. His testimony was powerful, honest, and riveting. So, I mean, it's almost as if, I don't know if Trumpism or the president's strategy here, was, you know, do you see that having played out in Brett Kavanaugh's testimony today?
That's right. We saw a very different Brett Kavanaugh than we saw speaking to Fox News over the weekend, where he sounded very quiet and calm. He appeared with his wife. He spoke very straightly about his time in college and attending church. This Brett Kavanaugh was angry, I have to say. I think many were surprised when he quickly became so angry and very emotional. After anger came tears. We saw Brett Kavanaugh cry more than once in the course of his testimony, both when he was talking about his father, and then also just about the accusations that had been made against him. There wasn't a lot of calm from Brett Kavanaugh in the course of this, especially when he was having some very heated exchanges with Democrats. He threw down a pen at one point while talking to Senator Dianne Feinstein. He was cutting Democratic senators off. I think one moment was Senator Amy Klobuchar was asking him if if he had ever been blackout drunk after explaining that her father was an alcoholic and at 90 years old still goes to AA meetings. And he said, well, have you?
Right.
And I think that caused a lot of surprise at a tone that was very political in a Supreme Court nomination hearing.
He did apologize to Senator Klobuchar a few minutes after that, though. But you're right. There were lots of moments of extreme passion and emotion from Brett Kavanaugh, perhaps, you know, seen in the eyes of some as a man fighting tooth and nail to preserve his reputation. So perhaps a position of strength here. Well, let's go to Mike Allen. Let's bring him into the conversation. He's co-founder and editor of Axios, and he also joins us now from Washington. Mike Allen, it's good to have you.
Well, Magna, thank you for having me on this historic day, a day that our children's children will talk about.
Absolutely. So, I mean, pick up on the line of conversation I've got here going with Ginger. I mean, do you think Brett Kavanaugh has benefited by coming out so strong today, or has he taken a calculated risk that could potentially backfire?
For sure, calculated risk. And I talked to a number of his allies during the break between the two witnesses. And this is what they said that he absolutely had to do. A fascinating conversation because Dr. Ford was so credible, so convincing, so calm. As we heard earlier in the room, it was even sometimes hard to hear her, the reporter, say. By the time it came to be Judge Kavanaugh's time to testify, he was in a very deep hole. And toward the end, you might have already been on the air, but as it got to the end of this 8-hour and 45-minute day, he said he hadn't been listening to her testimony because he was working on his statement. He said that he'll plan to listen to it later, but that's probably good because he would have been rattled if he had.
Right. Well, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And I know, I mean, so many people watched and heard this today that I want to get their views on it. So Ginger and Mike, hang on for just a moment here. Let's go to Beth, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Beth, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. My point has been touched on by what your guest said, but what you saw in Judge Kavanaugh today was a bully. It was a bully who had been used to getting his way, had always either charmed or steamrolled his way through things, and was finally getting some pushback and couldn't deal. You saw him go through anger and tears, and I think that was the real Judge Kavanaugh. And frankly, I think that's a view into who we would be getting if our senators are confirming him to the Supreme Court. And also, it was deplorable behavior on behalf of many of the senators, the GOP senators, and I wish they would get half as outraged about the injustices facing women and minorities and immigrants and people all over this country every day, their own constituents, as they did about potentially smearing the reputation of this man that their president had put forward.
Beth, thank you for your call. Let's go to Miami, Florida. Santiago's on the line there. You're on the air, Santiago.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, my comment is that she's known of this judge, according to the things that she says that she did of him, all throughout his career. And he's had appointments to federal, state appeals courts and all this. If that bothered you so much, with something like that is so, you're violating somebody so deeply, why didn't you just go before he even got to the point that he is now and say it? Apparently, it didn't bother you that much, because I think what it was is probably a rite of passage, which if you go to any high school or any college, and this goes on all the time. Besides that, she's not even accusing him that he actually raped her. He's actually accusing her of groping him. If you go to
Santiago, hang on. I'm just curious. A rite of passage for whom?
Oh, in that age bracket, at 17, at 16 years old, today, I mean, I know of that happening all the time because I get calls from people, my friends. Oh, my daughter went to a party. I told her that. They know that. She did not do anything that any other person hasn't done at that age group. And it's not, and if you go to court and you try to accuse somebody that they groped me or they touched me, they're going to say, well, there's no crime committed. Besides that, you're a juvenile and she's a juvenile.
Santiago, I'm just curious. Since you're saying that everyone else has done this, what she's alleging is that Judge Kavanaugh, when he was a teenager, threw himself on top of her and put his hand over her mouth to stop her from screaming. If you're saying everyone, like, Have you done that kind of thing? Come on.
No, I haven't done it. I haven't done that. But I know what goes on in colleges. I mean, this happens all. What another thing is, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, I can't prove his innocence or anything. But I'm saying what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The moment that you start doing this for everybody involved, not just selective groups, then I will agree that, you know, we're getting back to the norm. We're trying to get to the norm. Mm. Because you had this other lady there, Juanita Broderick, that said that Clinton raped her. No Democrats were up in arms or screaming about her being raped, you know, and all these double standards that we see.
Well, Santiago, thank you so much for your call. And your point about the timing of this, I want to turn to Ginger and Mike here, because the timing question in terms of when Professor Ford came forward, even with her anonymous allegations to both her congresswoman and Senator Feinstein's office, that came up again and again in today's hearings, right? With Republicans repeatedly saying, why did Senator Feinstein, you know, not alert the majority until just relatively recently? Why did she waste 6 weeks that could have been used for an investigation? I mean, that led to the whole talk about this being an ambush, right, Ginger?
That's right. I think that particularly after she was deemed to be so credible in her testimony, it was really hard to try to impeach her credibility. So instead, we're hearing a lot more of this criticism of timing. And that's because there's an argument being made that this is all political. It's would be very hard for these senators to get up and try to frame their vote on Kavanaugh as either they believe Ford or not. That would be a really difficult vote. But if you frame it as Republicans versus Democrats, as a partisan fight, and you bolster that argument by saying, oh, the timing was so late, it must be partisan, that's an easier vote in some of their minds to take, to be able to say, I'm voting for Republicans, I'm voting for conservatives, and I'm voting against the left. And that was the terminology we heard from Brett Kavanaugh, and that was the terminology we heard from folks like Lindsey Graham, who got up during the hearing today and made that argument and promised to vote for Kavanaugh.
Hmm. And Mike Allen, I mean, how significant is it that according to the timeline that was laid out today, and actually we've known for a little while now, that Christine Blasey Ford actually did initially reach out to members of Congress, I believe before Brett Kavanaugh was even named as the actual nominee. He was on the short list itself. I mean, that seems to be a key part here that wasn't actually discussed all that much today.
No, that's a great point. And the other end of the timing question is timing going forward. So one thing that Judge Kavanaugh didn't have a good answer for was this FBI investigation idea. And the reason there's no good answer for that is that delay helps the Democrats, that delay makes it harder if Judge Kavanaugh were to go down for Republicans to engineer a successor, perhaps on the cusp of losing the Senate. So he's having to push back in other ways, including pointing out that he wasn't asked about this during the courtesy call meetings with the senators. But that's the one place that he could not be as definitive as he was elsewhere. There just is not a good answer from the Republicans' point of view.
Well, let's see if we can sneak in one more quick call here before we have to take a break. Richard's calling from Miami, Florida. You're on the air, Richard.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to correct something. A lot of people keep saying that there's no evidence or stories unsubstantiated. And I just like to say, even putting aside everything else, it's not true, because sworn testimony is evidence. It's true in the federal and every state evidence code, and there's a good reason for it, because when someone's willing to put their liberty on the line and show up in person and say, I swear to what I observed, it's worth something.
But I think people are saying there's no corroborating evidence.
Right. They are saying that, but you notice when a lot of people, particularly Republican senators, speak, they say the stories are either uncorroborated or unsubstantiated. And an allegation becomes substantiated, I think, when it's elevated to sworn testimony. That is evidence, and that is substantiation. It's no longer an allegation at this point. It's elevated. And I'd just like to also add that I think that there's no reason to disbelieve anything that Ford said.
Well, so Richard, it sounds to me that you're a lawyer. I have one more question for you before we have to take a break here. I mean, look, the committee today the Republican members of the committee said they have been doing an investigation. They've been doing their due diligence as a committee, and that any corroborating or exculpatory evidence that they may have uncovered is already part of the record. So why need an FBI investigation, even if they had wanted to open one? I mean, would you agree, or would an FBI investigation bring up something new that's potentially corroborating or exculpatory? Just got 30 seconds before I have to take a break here, Richard, but I'm curious what you have to say.
Okay, sure. I'd say I'm actually not so sure an FBI investigation is needed, because I really don't know what's involved in that, and I think the Senate can take more evidence. But nothing is a substitute for sworn in-person testimony. And so Judge should have been there, and other witnesses should have been there.
Mark Judge. Okay. Well, Richard from Miami, Florida, thank you so much for your call. We're talking about today's riveting, sometimes confusing, but definitely historic testimony from Christine Blasey Ford and Judge Brett Kavanaugh about his nomination to the United States Supreme Court. I'm joined by Ginger Gibson. She's political correspondent for Reuters. And Mike Allen, he's co-founder and editor of Axios. We want to hear from you. 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. What is your reaction to what you heard on Capitol Hill today? What effect do you think it's going to have on politics in America and the United States Supreme Court? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here. And on the latest episode of How I Built This, how Stuart Butterfield failed in two companies, pivoted, and then built two amazing new companies, Flickr and Slack. Check out How I Built This wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about today's testimony from Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh about the allegations she's brought against Kavanaugh and the impact that's going to have on his nomination, or is today's testimony will have on his nomination to the Supreme Court, and what now lies ahead. We're joined tonight by Ginger Gibson. She's political correspondent for Reuters, and by Mike Allen. He's co-founder and editor of Axios. And Mike, I want to ask you a quick question here, because, you know, we were talking before the break about evidence, and it seemed interesting to me that Judge Kavanaugh repeatedly this afternoon and this evening said that other witnesses who had been named as having been at the party where the alleged assault is said to have happened, that those witnesses indeed have submitted statements into the record. And he kept saying that the other witnesses said that it did not happen. But that's not strictly true, right? Because their statements say that they don't remember the events of that evening. And yet he kept characterizing it in a different way, I think about a dozen times.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You're right to pick up on that. And what we see there is Judge Kavanaugh's strategy. And this was a triage strategy. Whether intentionally going to this hearing, or especially after Ford did so well this morning, Judge Kavanaugh gave up on trying to persuade or convince anybody on the Democratic. And he was just trying to bowl his way through to persuade the Republicans that he was willing to fight. It was much more him, his reputation, standing up for himself and his view, rather than campaigning for the job. Because we have never heard someone talk to senators the way that he talked about Democratic senators today, including a very flip, have you, Senator Klobuchar, after she asked him if he had ever blacked out.
Mike, still there? Looks like we're going to have to... Yes. Oh, you're still there, Mike. Okay, good. Sorry, I just I lost you for a second there. I mean, Ginger Gibson, pick up on that thought, because, I mean, in my mind, here we have Judge Kavanaugh, who is looking to be seated as a justice on the United States Supreme Court. He knows very well that there's a big difference between a statement saying that witnesses do not remember the events of the evening. There's a difference between that and them saying it didn't happen, which is not what they said.
I think that any expectation for nuance was probably gone very early on. We saw President Trump in the last week turn up the pressure. He was just in full attack mode. I mean, he could get worse, I know, but that was attack mode, at least the start of it from President Trump. And we saw that echoed and repeated in Kavanaugh's testimony. This was an aggressive effort. I think it's clear that he was talking to Republicans. As Mike pointed out, he had given up on persuading any Democrats. This was a rallying cry. And I think it was also a rallying cry directed at his supporters in America. He was saying to them, you could be me, that he had been falsely accused and that any good person out there could be the subject of such things, which is a belief that we see when we know that some men won't go to dinner with women that they were with. I mean, that's the kind of culture he was talking to. This notion that he's a victim, we heard from President Trump, we heard from him, and he's really just trying to take that argument to the nth degree. He's not worried about arguing over who was there and who said in what words. Everything that supports him, and everything that doesn't is a partisan attack. And that was really what was going on there.
Well, I mean, I think your use of the word phrase rallying cry is spot on. In fact, one of the most forceful moments in that cry, I think we actually heard from Senator Lindsey Graham, right, Republican of South Carolina. Here's a particularly heated moment where he heaped criticism and perhaps even scorn on his fellow members of the judiciary.
What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics.
Mike Allen, what do you make of that moment?
What I make of that is that he was concerned about having lost. And he went on to say how hard it would be to work with other members of the Senate. And one of the best tweets in the whole day was from Jeremy Peters of the New York Times. And Jeremy tweeted, "What I saw today was a fury." And we heard that there from Senator Graham. "A fury between members of opposite parties that is profound and unnerving as I've ever seen. They're not faking it."
Well, let's take a call here. Judy is calling from Topsom, Maine. You're on the air.
Hi there. The only comment I have is just that I think regardless of the content that, you know, who's telling the truth, I mean, without even getting into that, I don't think Brett Kavanaugh has what it takes to be a Supreme Court justice. I think he showed that. I think this was an extension of, you know, a job interview and, you know, who behaves that way? And what is so special about him that, you know, that everybody's going to the mat to, you know, save this nominee?
Right. Judy, so, can I just, I'm going to take it back from you there because it's a good question that you ask, and thank you for your call. Ginger Gibson, do you have a response for Judy? I mean, she's wondering why the GOP is fighting so hard for Judge Kavanaugh when there are extraordinarily well-qualified conservative judges out there.
That's right. There are other judges. There are other judges that those on the panel would have rathered. I would guess Senator Lee would rather himself have been going through this confirmation process. And it seems to sort of befuddle you when you consider the potential huge political ramifications. Angry women. We know women are angry. We know they have vowed to show up and vote in November. All indications would be that this is making them more angry, if that's possible. So why do this. And I think that it's the importance of seeing it as a win. And I think that Mitch McConnell knows that he still has a very tenuous relationship with his base, and they still see him as not being a solid deliverer of what they want, especially now that they control both chambers of Congress. And I think for him, you know, I was with him at the Value Voters Summit on Friday when he vowed to, quote, plow through and confirm Kavanaugh. He was talking to that base of his electorate, and he was saying he was going to do this. And I think from a political standpoint, it's really important to them. Now, if they were to pull him, you're right, there's probably more conservative judges who could be named and confirmed by the Senate. But this is a combination of many things more than just the ideology of one individual judge versus others.
Right. Mike Allen, there's a question that I asked Ginger a little earlier, and I want to ask it of you here, because it seemed to me that across, you know, these 8 hours today, we saw a real closing of ranks of sort between, you know, amongst Democrats and Republicans. On the Democratic side, you know, the continuous pounding of the issue of not getting an independent investigation from the FBI, acknowledging that the FBI is not going to make a judgment, but they're going to search for evidence. They asked about that over and over and over again. On the Republican side, the emerging narrative there seems to be, you know, they're accusing Democrats of this being a political hit, an ambush, you know, a late ambush in the nomination process. That's really the language we heard across the board from the GOP, and including from Brett Kavanaugh himself. I mean, do those, other than convincing partisans already who probably aren't going to change their minds at all, what effect do these two competing narratives have now?
Well, that's a piece of the rallying cry. And another way to look at the base issue is in a defensive way, and that is that Republicans told me one of the reasons that they plowed ahead with this hearing, and I'll admit I was a little skeptical that this hearing was going to happen. I can tell you there's a lot of people in both parties that thought that no good of this could come for either would come for Republicans. A lot of people told me Senator Schumer is dreaming tonight that this hearing will occur. But the reason Republicans told me it was going to, no matter what, was they didn't want it to look to their people like the Democrats had won. They didn't want it to look like they had lost control of both the policy and the politics, and that essentially Democrats were able to run the Senate in a preview of coming attractions of what we might have if there's too big of a night for Democrats in November, because there are other options. It does not have to be Judge Kavanaugh. And something that we reported on Axios is that the group, one of the groups that's been working Demand Justice to support, has bought the URL Stop Coney Barrett. That's Judge Amy Coney Barrett of Chicago, a Catholic conservative the base would love. So they're already looking ahead to what could be next if something goes wrong for Kavanaugh.
Yeah. By the way, I'm just seeing here that CNN is reporting that Senator Susan Collins, Jeff Flake, Lisa Murkowski, and Joe Manchin, so three Republicans and one Democrat, met privately this evening. And Lisa Desjardins from PBS says on Twitter that Manchin is saying we are all undecided. So that just happening this evening as well. Let's go to another caller here where Jay is calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on the air, Jay.
Hey, good evening to you. Just a comment from today's hearing. Obviously, this is probably the most consequential nomination process, at least as far as, you know, American jurisprudence is concerned, you know, with this particular nominee. But I think also for the purposes of, you know, the GOP's standing in the midterms as well as the 2020 elections, I think that Judge Kavanaugh's strategy, though I didn't agree with it, his strategy of not giving in to Senator Durbin's question, that last question regarding the FBI investigation involvement, for him not to give an inch on that, I think was important at this 11th-hour fight, because had he given in to that, then we have more posture from the Democrats. We have a prolonging of this process, and based upon what President Trump said yesterday in his press conference, there is no telling whether or not he withdraws Kavanaugh as the nominee. So
right.
I thought, from a defensive standpoint, brilliant.
Jay, thank you for your call. Ginger Gibson and Mike Allen, you know, one thing we haven't talked about very much at all was Rachel Mitchell, the Arizona prosecutor who had been brought in by the GOP to do a lot of this questioning. And she very methodically questioned Christine Blasey Ford during her testimony, but very quickly faded into the background entirely after the first few, you know, first half hour or so of Judge Kavanaugh's time before the committee. I mean, Ginger, what was the significance of that?
You know, I spoke with a Republican today who told me that they thought that she actually helped the Democratic cause, that her sort of long series of sometimes befuddling questions, like going on at length about whether or not Dr. Ford was afraid of flying and had she gotten on a plane to certain destinations, that it was unemotional, that it was direct, and that Ford's ability to answer all of those questions sort of bolstered her credibility, that she didn't get flustered, that she didn't get annoyed. And so the idea was is that she almost turned out to be a help more than a hindrance. But you're right, she did disappear after just a couple of rounds of questions during the Republican process. And I think that we heard a bit of criticism because of that already, that one of these callers saying that these Republicans had come to the defense of Kavanaugh. They were happy to speak up and the criticism that they were fearful or afraid to speak up during Ford's testimony, it was probably a little more optics than anything else. But I think that her presence there maybe avoided having a really terrible moment during Ford's testimony, but probably didn't put any points on the board for them in that process.
Right. I'm seeing a note here that Senator John Cornyn explaining what you were just saying, that why Rachel Mitchell stopped asking questions. He says, quote, frankly, I think there was some frustration, Ginger, as you're pointing out, amongst the senators that they thought there were arguments that needed to be made that she, frankly, was not equipped to make. That's what Senator John Cornyn was saying there. Mike Allen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I talked to a number of Republicans who think that the idea of getting this prosecutor backfired badly. It's for the reasons that Ginger talked about. And in addition to that, the other side of the coin is that she also was hurting Judge Kavanaugh at the beginning of his questioning. We were saying as we were watching at Axios that she was doing more damage to him than she had to the previous witness.
Right, bringing up issues with his calendar.
Clinical is the same point that Ginger was mentioning during the Dr. Ford. He was asking these unbelievably clinical questions. He wasn't answering them particularly well. And it just built sympathy for Dr. Ford. She was asking the questions the way a prosecutor would. That was not the touch that Republicans needed with this witness.
Right. I mean, and after all, that is what she is. She's a prosecutor in Maricopa County, Arizona. Ginger and Mike, we've just got a minute and a half here left to go. This was a remarkable day. And as Mike, as you said, it's something that our children's children will be talking about deep into the future. But what about the immediate future? I mean, Ginger, what do you think is going to happen next? Eventually, this will land. I mean, at this point in time, it seems it will eventually land before the full Senate.
I think it is not to be missed that it really gripped the nation. I know that women across the country were watching. People were watching in bars. I had someone telling me they were in the San Jose airport listening to people sit at the bar and in the seating areas discussing the testimony in real time. The Senate is going to have to move. They're going to move. I wish I could predict the future. The money seems to be on the continued possibility that it's a 50-50 vote and Vice President Pence has to come and break the tie. And don't count out the impact all of this could have on the November elections. I talked to women today who were angry, who were sad, who were crying at their desks, and that could have a real impact on their motivation in November.
Mike Allen, we've got about 20 seconds left. Your last thought on this remarkable day.
At least two of the three branches of government are at risk here. You're going to have problems with the legitimacy of a Supreme Court justice, just as there are questions about the legitimacy of the president. And you have the Senate, in the way that we heard Lindsey Graham talking about there, may be unable to work, too. It would be some turn if the Trump White House were the most functional branch of government.
Mike Allen, co-founder and editor of Axios, joining us from Washington today. Mike, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And Ginger Gibson, political correspondent for Reuters, also with us tonight from Washington. Ginger, my great gratitude to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And listeners, this has been a remarkable day. So please go to onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio and let us know what you think. What's your reaction to what you saw with Judge Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford? Onpointradio.org again. Thanks so much for listening tonight. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.